from the Kids in the Hall and from the McDonald family. That was my first show, though it wasn't a show, it was just basically a family. And it wasn't that funny at all, because Daddy drank. Anyway, you're watching Showbiz Monkeys, because I'm a Showbiz Monkey. This is my impression of a monkey. Now this is me driving. I'm in a box. An oddly shaped box. Consequence when you playing with
the fire. Move to the left. Okay, I am here with Kevin McDonald.
I am also here with Kevin McDonald.
I just have to say off the start.
Everyone wants a piece of Kevin McDonald. I'm sorry. What do you want to say from the start?
No,
it's not the start anymore. We've already started with saying Kevin McDonald a few times, so now it's secondary to the start. So you want to say secondarily?
From secondarily.
Yes.
After all of that, yes. I do want to say that the Kids in the Hall, along with late Night with Conan O'Brien, was pretty much the beginning of my comedy nerddom.
Oh.
And
you hear something boring about that? I'm interrupting you.
Not. I'm sure it's not boring.
Boring, but it's interesting to me. But I'm a boring man, so I would find boring things interesting. The first producer of the Kids in the Hall, after season three, left to become the first producer of Conan O'Brien. I believe he still is. Jeff Ross.
Oh, I didn't know that Jeff Ross worked on Kids in the Hall.
Yes, yes.
And he is. He is still the producer of Conan's show. So.
Very, very nice man. I'm not even lying. Because I would say that to be nice, but as it happens, I'm not lying. He does happen to be a very, very nice man. I am also a very, very nice man.
Yes, so far it seems to be the case. But yeah, so for me, both those shows pretty much shaped my own comedy taste growing up. So it's just a real honor to talk to you today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. I also like the Conan show. I have a little problem with the Kids in the Hall show, but Conan's very good.
Some of the guys on there aren't really,
The dark-haired one isn't so good.
Now just, as a refresher course for anyone that, either is a little too young to maybe remember, or just they forget, or they might have not heard this before. How did Kids in the Hall originally start up? How did the project start?
I know, and I seem old to be in a group named the Kids in the Hall, but we were actually kids when we started it. I was a teenager, and Dave was a teenager, and we met in Toronto, Second City Workshops. We met doing the mirror exercise, where you mirror each other's movements, and he made me laugh just doing the mirror exercise. So then after that, when the class was over, I didn't even know his name, and I said, do you want to join my comedy troupe? And he said, yes. And then we started a comedy troupe with a guy named Luciano Casimiri, and we became the Kids in the Hall. Now, meanwhile, at the same time in Calgary, a group of young comics called The Audience were taking theater sports in Calgary by storm. And they were doing so well in Calgary, they decided to move to Toronto, which was the Canadian Big Smoke. For comedy, so I'm hand talking. So they moved. This is Calgary. They moved to Toronto, where we were, and we became a big, big, big troupe. And people kept quitting when they became very successful. And so there was just us Kids in the Hall. And then Scott later forced us away into the troupe because we needed a gay actor.
And then how did that transfer from being on stage in a group to actually getting a television show?
What's funny, we always thought, for some reason, we always thought we were going to go to movies. I don't know why. We always said, oh, we're going to do movies. I don't know why we thought TV show. It made sense. We were discovered by TV producers, people who worked with Lorne Michaels, and Lorne Michaels liked us when he saw us. And it seemed to make sense. What we were doing, we always thought like TV shows. We always thought we had, like when we were a stage troupe, we had the main stage. I'm hand talking again. And over here, we had a little side stage. So we would do something, and then we'd... the lights would go up there and the lights would go on the side stage. It would be like in TV speak, a cut to the cow, cut to, and then so we were already thinking TV-ish, and it seemed to make sense when we got to TV. Some cut twos are bad. We love cut to comedy, but like in Gilligan's Island, it'd be, you're not getting me that dress. You're not getting me that dress. Cut to, he's in the dress. I'm not marrying that gorilla. I'm not marrying the cut to. I do, but that's bad cut to. Though I do think it's funny.
You guys did some pretty good cut-tos.
Thank you very much.
Now, working in television usually involves long hours to begin with, but you guys were writing and performing.
Yes.
Everything. Was it stressful to get a TV show out every week?
It wasn't stressful because we were young. We were actually kids, and it just seemed like that was the thing we were waiting all our lives to do. And I'm a very, very lazy man. Not a workaholic, a lazy-holic. But it didn't seem like work. It seemed like fun. And by season two, it was a little overwhelming, so we started hiring friends who were in the troupe before to write with us. But still, it was the same hours and the same work. We still wrote the same amount. But we were all writing together. But we like. But I forget what I'm saying, but I like doing this. I like pretending to be Gilbert Gottfried. We were young, And it seemed like what we were supposed to do, so it didn't seem like that worked. I don't think anyone ever said, oh, I'm tired, ever. I don't think so. Nowadays, we shot a thing last year, and then now that we're old men, I heard that a lot. I'm tired.
At what point in the process of filming the show and it getting out there in Canada and then in the U.S. as well, did you realize the cultural impact that Kids in the Hall started to have?
We were like in our little vacuum shooting in Toronto, so we had no idea. We had no idea if anybody was watching it. And then even when the show, we did 5 years, even when the show ended, we did a little like mini tours, and so we got an inkling, 500 to 1,000 people in some town liked it. But it wasn't until our 2000 comeback tour that we realized, if we had any cultural impact at all, we realized it then. Because I think from 95 to when the show went off, it was when the show went off the air, to 2000, that's when they started repeating the show in the States and in Canada. And that's when, again, if we have any cultural impact, that's when it happened, because it repeated over and over and over, and that made us far more known than during the run of the show.
Now, I know this is probably a hard question to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because that's okay. Hard-nosed investigative journalism here. Do you have any sketches in particular over the 5 seasons that stand out to you as like your personal favorites?
Well, I always think there's a scene called Reg that was in our first special that we got that got us the TV show. I always thought that defined the troupe the best. It's where five of us are playing, we're five friends. We're basically playing ourselves, sort of. Of course, it's not a true story. And we're sitting around a campfire and we're toasting a friend, Reg, who died. And as the sketch goes on, you realize that he died because we killed him. That it was a ritualistic murder, but we're toasting him. And I always thought that if you put a sketch in a time capsule, that would best define. And it's the five of us, it's sort of our dark sense of humor, but there's still like hard jokes in it. In each personality that each of us plays sort of represents them. Mm-hmm. But of course, the most famous sketch is probably Head Crusher. Do I have an all-time favorite sketch? I probably do. I don't know. Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
I like the sketch. My favorite sketch of mine is like the... Sorry, this is very important. The kids, I'm sorry. This is interesting. My favorite sketch... Hope the interview is going well. It's going very well. I'm doing it now. I love you. See you soon. Oh, I should play. Hope your rehearsal's going well. Hope your rehearsal is going well. Okay. There. My favorite sketch that I did was the King of Empty Promises, where I played the King of Empty Promises, where I promised I would do things and go, oh, will you really get that for me? We'll do. And then when the next day, go, oh, did you get that for me? I slipped my mind. and that was my favorite. But my first favorite that I can always say the favorites I did, they're not my favorites of the whole show, but they're the only ones I remember because I did them. It was the first thing I wrote that was I wrote it with Norm Hiscock. The first thing we wrote that was a good cut two thing, where we're at a party and I keep singing the wrong thing. Like I'm telling a joke and a guy doesn't laugh, and I say, "What are you deaf? Well, you're deaf." And then you cut to, "How did I know he was deaf?" So that was the first time that I did a cut two thing. And then I started doing cut twos like crazy.
Now, for years after Brain Candy came out, you did a couple of sporadic tours with Kids in the Hall, but then last year you did. Death Comes to Town. Yeah. How did the idea for that come about after all these years getting back together and doing stuff?
Well, it all started on the... we did a tour in 2000, 2002, and that was like a best of greatest hits kind of tour. And then starting in 2006, because it was hard to get us together, so it took a few years, we started thinking to make it exciting for us. Again, we're boring people, so it doesn't take much to excite us. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that chair is exciting! Case in point. We decided to do all new sketches, which is like kind of scary and exciting. And so for 2 years, we all lived in different cities, but from 2006 to 2008, we'd meet every few months in LA, and we did like we used to do before we had a TV show. We would write sketches from Monday to Wednesday and then and rehearse them and then do a show Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And we did that a few times until we picked the best sketches, and that became our tour. So why am I telling you this? Because you asked about Death Comes to Town.
Yeah.
Hi, don't worry, I'm not crazy. So we're doing the tour. Death Comes to Town. It's all new stuff. And it's exciting because it was killing every night. It seemed like, yeah, because at first they would laugh at anything because they wanted to laugh, but then you do have to ride on the material. So it was very exciting that we could still write stuff that got laughs. And so then we started thinking, especially Bruce, why don't we write a movie? Why don't we write something new? Why don't we go back and do another movie? And he had an idea, and we started working on it. And the idea grew, and it seemed to make more sense to do a TV show, and it seemed like it would be better at a long-form idea. So we copied the British way of doing things, made it sort of like a miniseries, like an eight-parter. And but it grew from the excitement of writing new material.
Oh.
We think that we like writing better than we think we like acting.
Oh.
I think. I'm not saying we think we're better at writing, though I think we are. Here, this is more boredom. I think SCTV are better performers, but I think we're better writers. Not that they're not great writers.
Now, you've been involved in the Winnipeg Comedy Festival before. Last year, you had your one-man show, Hammy and the Kids.
Yes, I did.
Here.
I apologize.
No, don't apologize for that. Now, how does the Winnipeg Comedy Festival compare to other festivals you've been involved with?
Let's see. I've been to the Montreal Comedy Festival. That's just like overwhelmingly crazy. It's like everything's happening all the time. You stay up all night and you sleep during the day and you perform. Your voice gets more hoarse every night because of staying up late. We did the Las Vegas Comedy Special, which used to be Aspen, and that was just really quick. The exciting thing about that is that some major star would be down the hall, and like in between sketches, I would run down and see if I could see some big star. Dane Cook, he's big. I just want to see. In Winnipeg, it's more intimate, but it's just as much fun. That's the amazing thing. And Winnipeg is a fun city, so I think that bleeds over into the festival. It's fun. And some of the comics they have are amazing, and I enjoy it. And now that it's home, I like festivals at home.
I was going to mention, you, even though you're not from here originally, you have been living in Winnipeg the last couple of years.
Yes.
Do you get a sense of why this city seems to produce a decent amount of creative types, musicians, actors, comedians?
I know. I don't know. I had a theory once, and I forget it, but it was great. Can we just pretend I said it a great theory?
Wonderful theory.
Late 80s, like Winnipeg was started getting known that it was the art center of the of our is Canada Nation.
I think they are now
of our nation, and maybe it's because it's literally the center. Maybe that has something to do with it, though I have no reason why it would be, but it is literally the center. Maybe it's one of those places that there's odd and normal meet, and I think when odd and normal meet, the great art come out from it. If it's too normal, it could be boring. If it's too artistic, it would just be weird. But like they had some of the great filmmakers in Winnipeg, and in fact, we used one, John Pays. And we would use Guy Madden, but he was too weird for us. Now that we've all done his movies, I feel guilty that we didn't use him. But the filmmaking that was coming out of the 80s and 90s in Winnipeg was amazing. And dance, I think it's sort of the dance city of Canada.
The Royal Winnipeg Ballet.
Not that I can dance. I can do step ball change, but no, I can't. And maybe it is because it's the center. I don't know. Maybe because it's small, big. It's a bunch of factors, but it definitely is an artistic center for sure.
Now, this year's Winnipeg Comedy Festival, you're doing a series at the Gas Station Theater, I believe, called Kevin Fest?
Yes.
Can you tell us about...
Because it's a fest and my name is Kevin.
Yes. Can you tell us about these series of shows, I guess, and what they're all about?
Yes. Well, for 5 days during the festival, I believe it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, I believe. Every day at the Gas Station Theater at 12 o'clock. I will be presenting a comedy movie from the 70s that I loved as a kid that influenced me, and also I found later influenced the kids in the hall when I met them, but I hadn't met them when I was a kid. We're called Kids in the Hall, but we didn't know each other when we were kids. And they're movies like from my comedy idols, Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, Gene Wilder, Monty Python, Albert Brooks, and it's very exciting. I've seen them all 10,000 times, but I'm going to speak a little bit before the movie about how they influenced me and a little boring facts about them. But then my favorite part is I'm going to sit and watch the movie. Even though I've seen each movie 40 times, I'm very excited to watch with people because usually I just watch it on TV and see the thing. And I'm also excited that since most of the people in the world now are under 40, except for me, I seem to be the only person in the world over 40, everyone seems to have seen Young Frankenstein. they've heard of the Monty Python Meaning of Life, and some have seen it, and a lot haven't. But the others, they have no idea. Like, no one's seen a Woody Allen movie from the 70s. That's amazing to me. So I'm really excited to show that. And nobody's heard of Albert Brooks, who's one of the great comic geniuses of all time. He did a movie every 4 or 5 years. He was in Taxi Driver and Broadcast News. But he wrote and directed and starred in his own movies there, and they're all great. Mm-hmm. And this is, I'm showing his first one. I'm excited about that. And also, possibly one of my all-time favorite comedies of all time, it would be tied with Dr. Strangelove and Spinal Tap, which aren't in the festival because they're not from the 70s, but The Heartbreak Kid, the original Heartbreak Kid, mm-hmm. not the Ben Stiller one, which I never saw. The original one with Charles Grodin, directed by Elaine May, written by Neil Simon, is one of the great dark comedy classics of all time. It's socially dark. It's not super dark like Dr. Strangelove, but I would call it socially dark. And I'm also, no one's heard of that. Well, they've heard of it because they saw the remake with, boy, I'm talking loud and I'm boring. No. They've heard of it because they saw the remake with Ben Stiller. But this is like a classic movie, and I'm excited to show that. I'm excited to show movies. I like movies.
About a month ago, I saw Dave Foley do stand-up in L.A.
Really?
He's just started doing stand-up. I'm sure you knew that.
But, I didn't know that.
Oh, he's just started doing stand-up.
I talked to him now, then. I didn't know
and
that.
He did. He's already doing like 45-minute sets.
Dave Foley?
Yeah. So I was curious. You've done one-man show.
Yes.
But has the idea of stand-up ever intrigued you, or is that something?
Well, when I was very young, I got the instinct right away not to do stand-up. One thing, I was nervous to be on stage by myself. That's not entirely true, but nervous. I realized early it wasn't my strength. I'm trying to pronounce my G in strength, because I just say strength, and then my girlfriend said, no, you have to pronounce the G. Strength. I've already said that. I realized my strength wasn't being alone on stage and being funny, that I was sort of like, hopefully, not as good, of course, but like Gene Wilder and Young Frankenstein, reacting from people and making a face and pausing and then saying the right thing. And I seem to needed people. Now, the one-man show is going to be a little more comfortable being by myself. There were always solos in the Kitson Hall. I probably wrote the least amount, and it was always hard for me to write, but I liked the ones that I did. But now, Scott Thompson and I might be doing a stand-up comedy tour.
Oh.
Where he would do 20 minutes, I would do 20 minutes, then we would do, at the end, we'd come out and do sketches together. So I've started writing stuff. I'm not sure I'll be very good at it, but I'll try my best. I guess it's comedy. It would be the best if I, like, not that I do characters, but if I do my version of a character and not play myself, it'll probably be better. If I do play myself, I don't know. It's going to be, if you're boring, it'd be exciting to see how good I am. How bad I am. To see how good or bad I am.
Well, definitely keep an eye out for that.
Thank you. What I would do is warm it up in Winnipeg where there are more comedy clubs. But I wouldn't try it out of Rumors, even though that's the kind of clubs we might be playing, so maybe I should try it out of Rumors.
You should try it at one of the open mic nights.
Well, maybe.
They're every week.
It's go unannounced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very well.
Finally, is there anything coming up for you after the festival other than the previously mentioned stand-up thing you're working on?
I'm writing a pilot for a TV show. That was someone else's idea, but they've hired me. They got a deal for two pilots, and the guy who created and stars in it wrote the first pilot, and I wrote the second pilot. And it's for like Howie Mandel and Fremantle, that does American Idol. There's a TV up here, and I think NBC in the States. And I would like to get a writing job. I'm writing a lot because I'm in Winnipeg, so I'm writing a lot. I think I may be writing a book too. And then the acting things that come up will come up right now. I did a new show, a web show, and it's also on a basic cable station, which I forget what it's called Papillon, where I played a bad co-pilot.
Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Showbizmonkeys.com.